Indeedy. It's time for another 2.5 hours of disrobing with Bathrobespierre's broadsides. Let's strip the mask off the City Council of Santa Cruz, find out what's really underneath, and if there ain't no civil rights there, well, it's time to find some. Stay with us. This is the August 12, 2001 show. I'm your host, Bathrobespierre Robert North.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio.
Welcome to Bathrobespierre's Broadside, Civil Rights in Santa Cruz, or lack thereof. I'm going to be with you for, well, till 1:30, 2.5 hours more or less, and you can call in to be a part of the show pretty easily. 427-3772 is our number here. Lines are open. We don't censor the calls. Try to, if you can, address yourself to what we're talking about, but if you feel like we're not talking about something that you think it needs to be talked about around that broad general topic of civil rights, I'm open to it and welcome your input and getting us back on track. It's a foggy Sunday here in Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, and again, the call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772. Free Radio is looking for DJs. If you want to get involved there or see if the Selections Committee wants to involve itself with you, give a call to 427-4523, 427-4523. That's the Free Radio voicemail line. It's, you can leave your name, your number, or contact point, and get a form an application form and get a disc or a tape, actually I guess it would be a tape for all of us low-tech people, to the admissions committee, the application committee. I'm not quite sure what they call themselves, but it is a group of the local Free Radio Santa Cruz mucky mucks who will muck around and determine if you are, you know, suitable material for our station. And actually, you know, this station has a broad range of perspective. If you feel that there's something that's not appearing on the air, you get actually additional points, and you're more likely to be let in. And you know, you got to pay a certain amount of dues if you do in order to keep the station rented. That's what we do. We each of us pays dues every month, and that keeps the rental space available and open, and also helps the equipment to get updated. Although actually, we don't really. I think we barely cover the rent. I'm not the best meeting goer. I don't know the most about the station's internal finances, but we can also stand donations in case you out there feel this is a great station and you want to keep it going, buy some new equipment for it. And I'll tell you, we're always in need of new equipment in spite of the heroic efforts of our technical folks here. You can again call 427-4523 and you can send a check to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or you can offer to donate other kinds of equipment. We also do fundraising rallies and concerts at different times. Concerts, actually, I've never heard of a Free Radio Santa Cruz fundraising rally, but hey, maybe I will. Maybe that we'll start one of those. My particular interest is people on the street, civil rights for poor people, things of that sort, and issues I feel that are largely ignored by the mainstream media. And though there has been more media play of Camp Paradise, the clean and sober homeless campground, which has been around for about half a year now, but prominent and exposed for about 2 months now. Generally, you don't see much about what's going on for homeless people. You didn't hear, for example, about the beating of a man a week ago, so badly he had to go to Dominican. I'm still waiting to get a full report on that incident. I actually did a brief tape with it. Berkeley Billy gave me the word on that. But I'm hoping to get more information on beatings, assaults, and other difficulties that have arisen outside there. That's a nice way of putting it. 1999, Chief Belcher, under pressure from the Homeless Issues Task Force, finally compiled and released the stats that showed homeless people were 4 to 10 times more likely to be beaten than people who weren't homeless. And it shows A, the vulnerability of the homeless condition, and B, a lot of bigotry against homeless people. And it's a reality, and it's one of the reasons why laws that criminalize homeless people are so vicious, because not only do they remove people's civil rights, not only do they put the stamp of approval on beating them up because they're not legal, but it denies them an opportunity to camp safely together, it denies them an opportunity to use police services. It's all wrong. And the endless creta, if you will, the bullshit that comes forth from the mouths of city council members, the city manager, the chief of police, the city attorney, and their apologists is incredible. They have all kinds of excuses about why, for example, Camp Paradise doesn't have a right to be where it is, given the fact that there are no other legal places for people to sleep. They have all kinds of excuses for why it's important to have laws that criminalize people downtown for sitting down on the sidewalk, even if they're not blocking the sidewalk, or for peacefully asking for spare change. And we just have to blow through these excuses and form a new consciousness and a new action mentality that says, no more. I was watching the inspiring series Eyes on the Prize last night, the PBS series about the African-American civil rights revolution of the 50s and 60s. And, of course, it was very moving and gripping to watch, and also very frightening to watch masses of people, masses of bigots beating up black people who just sat there at these lunch counters and took it. And then when they got hauled out by the police, four more came. We got a call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Bob.
Hey, Bob.
I just had a quick question that I'll hang up, let other people call in.
Sure.
I noticed I didn't see the vigil there the other night.
Yeah, that's
true.
Is
it gone now?
It is on vacation.
Oh, okay. So it was up for 2 or 3 days or something?
It was up for 104 hours or something, more
oh,
than...
Okay. sounds longer.
It lasted for 5 days, from Monday at 8 in the morning until about Friday at midnight.
And then I had heard that somebody had got ticketed for obstructing the sidewalk, trying to get people to sign flyers or something.
That is correct. I'll describe that off the air, or we can do it on air on the phone.
I'm going to hang up, so
okay.
If you want to talk more about it, fine.
Sounds good.
I just wanted to point that out.
Sure, and I'll call back if you got further questions.
Okay. See you later.
Bye-bye.
So, yeah, the word on that ticketing, Richard was ticketed. He's one of the Camp Paradise folks. He's a disabled fellow with a disabled placard who was being escorted about by the vehicle. Well, I should say, he put his placard in the vehicle with the tent on it that sat next to the Camp Paradise table down there in front of Borders on Pacific from Monday through Friday. And we were getting some harassment from some of the meter people who were saying that if they got a complaint, they generally allowed people to feed meters, but if there was a complaint, you were not allowed to feed the meter. You had to move every hour, even if you're willing to pay for another hour. Now, that's not true for people with disabled placards. And what Richard did was he would come down and table there and occasionally take off or doing other things in the near vicinity, whether it's shopping or whatever else he did. And he would leave the placard there in the vehicle that he was using. But one of the meter men particularly was rather hostile to the table. In fact, he stated to us, "Why do you have to have signs on vehicles?" "Oh, I'm not against political protests, of course. And we don't discriminate, but why these signs on the vehicles? You don't need that." We would have signs on the vehicle, of course, with a tent on top of it, dramatizing the fact that it's tents that are being criminalized in Santa Cruz, a city of 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people who have no legal place to stay, the 39 emergency shelter spaces each night at the ISSP being always full. So the tent is very pertinent, the vehicle is very pertinent, and we had signs, honk if you support Camp Paradise, and honking was quite a frequent phenomenon down there at the table for us honkies, most of us, and that was good. But Richard did get a ticket. As I said, he was harassed by one of the meter men who kept saying, "He has to be here right now, all the time. If he's not back here, I'm going to tow this vehicle. I'm going to ticket this vehicle with having the disabled placard because he's got to be with the vehicle," and so forth. And that wouldn't have been done for any other handicapped person in town if there was a placard there. They wouldn't have insisted that he stand next to the vehicle or be next to the vehicle or be on call next to the vehicle. That's an outrageous thing to do. And there were several tickets that were given, and I'm not sure if we're going to be able to contest them in court or not, since the new ticketing process, thanks to the state legislature, is a civil one, which gives you less protection. You don't get to go before municipal court judges anymore to challenge them as a sort of a civil administrator, and you have to, I think, post the bail first. It's a very elaborate, difficult process, and one that's hard to win. The business of the other ticket that Richard got, and I think that was the only ticket given to the vigil, people connected with the vigil that wasn't a parking ticket, was a ticket that he got, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, where he was either giving out flyers or simply involved in a crowd of people that were in front of the table, and two officers came by, Officers Kelly and Richards. And Richards, according to Richard, shoved him. And Richard, the homeless tabler, the Camp Paradise resident, was angry about this and said, "Officer Richards, why did you do that? Why did you shove me?" And Officer Richards came back, and they had a confrontation. And Richard had a bad day, I got to say this. I don't usually recommend people engage in loud confrontations with the police who are not staying around to provoke it. I suggest rather filing high-profile complaints or talking about it to another group of people, but not directly involving a police officer and calling him out, in essence, for, if he did, shoving past Richard. Another person said he did shove past Richard. I didn't see it. I assumed that that's what happened. But anyway, Richard was eventually given a ticket by Officer Richards for blocking the sidewalk, even though when the officer requested he move, he did move to the table. He actually walked to the table, and the officer followed him and gave him a ticket there. It's true also, however, that Richard, the protester, was making comments about the officer's height. Officer Richards is a short man. And I, you know, I didn't much go for the the personal macho type A stuff that was happening, regardless of how relevant the comments may have been. I mean, I have been in other situations with Officer Richards where I've seen him act or heard of him acting in not the best way. And Officer Richards, if you're listening, or if any of your friends or defenders are listening, you are, of course, free to call in and contest any of these claims. And the number here is 427-3772. And it's often said, oh, well, you can't, cops can't call in because, you know, they're on duty, or, you know, that's prohibited. Police officers' relatives have called into the show and defended the police department. And anybody out there who wants to defend the police department will be given a forum to do so here on my show. I will not be silent, but I will not cut you off, and I will let you speak on the issue. So feel free to do that. The number again is 427-3772. I have heard of Officer Richards engaging in a gratuitous arrest, which I can't go into in detail because the victim wants to wait till it's resolved in court. However, it will be discussed in detail, and actually has been discussed on this show without mentioning the officer's name. So what we have is, you know, that was the only ticket given the vigil, and some of the background is sort of instructive because it will bear on what comes up in the next few days. Officer, I should say Richard, the Camp Paradise resident and protester, I shouldn't say protester, he's simply a petitioner. None of these Camp Paradise people are protesters in the sense of spending a lot of time out there, you know, raising their fists and demanding changes. They were the ones who were aggressed against. They were the ones who were told that they couldn't stay in this camping area by the river that they had been in without any particular problems, although I guess Fitzmaurice, who made the initial contact with him, had received a complaint from a couple, and then he went down and talked to Larry Templeton and others and was satisfied and praised their camp, and the next day the cops came, tore up the marijuana plants of the medical marijuana guy there, and shortly thereafter gave tickets to everybody there saying, move by July 1st. I'm sorry, I didn't give tickets, gave warnings, move by July 1st. And that was followed a month later by tickets on August 3rd, move immediately or get your stuff taken and get sent to jail. And that, of course, that was not followed out. Now, the latest line we have is, if you believe the Sentinel, for a couple days ago, the city manager, the city police chief, Paul Sanford, the Camp Paradise's sometime attorney, Dan Alper, Larry Templeton, I'm not sure if Larry was there or not, I don't think he was, actually. And a couple of other city officials all sat down and said, well, we'll make a deal. We'll drop all these tickets, I think there were 20 or 30 of them at Camp Paradise, that we gave on August 3rd, if you will all clear out of there by August 30th. And the deal was rejected, because where are they going to clear out to? Disperse to an area that's more unsafe, destroy their community, so that they can be picked off later by police officers running around enforcing the absurd and vicious camping ordinance. Whether it's the sleeping ban sections, the blanket ban section, or the camping ban section. Obviously, their strength lay and lies in staying together and in pointing out the not just absurdity, but unconstitutionality and criminality of moving on a community of people. I mean, you know, under international law, this is called relocating and deporting people, destroying a community. You're not supposed to be able to do this under international law, but of course, John Barisoni, the city attorney, is hardly an international lawyer, and I guess his main job is to make sure that the scum get out of town as he sees it, or as he thinks the city council sees it. And I regret kind of saying this about John, because I like him. You know, he's a nice guy. I mean, I've seen him in non-professional circumstances, and I find him an agreeable person. Unfortunately, he should be fired from the city attorney's job, because the kind of work he's doing there is either as lapdog for the police department, or some other bigots in the department have poisoned his mind, or he's just doing the wrong thing. I mean, this is what we hoped would happen in 1998, that there would be a change in this personnel, whether it's John Barisoni, the city attorney, or Richard Wilson, the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, as I call him, since he's been in there since the early 80s, highest paying job, I believe, in the city as far as government job goes. Could be wrong about that, but it's up there over $100,000, over $120,000. Anyway, I digress. Richard, earlier in the day, had received, tried to make good on a voucher, and I think I've talked about this, and we're going to actually play an interview with him on this. But he had gone to the Homeless Services Center. Karen Brock had given him a check for $120 for a place to sleep in a motel, per the voucher he was given, at the same time as he was given his $54 ticket for being in a tent, for sheltering himself in a city that has no legal shelter. Thank you very much. So he said, gosh, I got two nights out, I'll use it. He went down got the 120 to use it, went to the Seabreeze Inn. It was a voucher for them, or Seabreeze Motel, I'm not sure which they call it. Got a room. This is also where Larry's fiancée, Larry Templeton, the co-founder of the camp's fiancée, was staying. Checked in, came out to the vehicle of Larry Templeton to talk to him, and was set upon verbally and viciously by his report and by Larry's report, too, by the owner, the man who identified himself as the owner of the Seabreeze. You get out of here, you scum. You got any business here? What are you doing here? You got a room here? And this kind of tone. And eventually insisted he leave. He went in and got his refund. And that same day, Officer Richards approached him and apparently shoved him on the street, or shoved his way past him, perhaps to show, you know, that tough guys with badges and guns can clear the sidewalk like bulldozers. I think that if that's what Officer Richards did, and I did not see it, I just heard about it, he shouldn't be doing that kind of thing, and he shouldn't be on the force if he's doing that kind of thing. And those people who are his superiors, like Sergeant Baker on the mall, should not be allowing him to do that kind of thing. But in fact, I suspect he is not being checked, and that he is probably, if not being encouraged, he is being condoned. And that is wrong. And I suggest to people out there, when they see these any incidents occur, that they stand and then they call a crowd over, that they take notes, that they leave a complaint with the ineffectual but still record-keeping Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or Citizens Police Review Board, CPRB as it's called, and also call HUF, 423-HUF. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Give them a call and tell us what happened. Try to take down as many details. Other witnesses, phone numbers, when it happened, how it happened, who did what, who said what, how far away were you, things of that sort. So, as far as the tabling goes, and I know I'm taking a long time to get out this report, but I'm hoping that some of this information is helpful. The tabling was originally going to go, well, there was a sort of difference of opinion. Some of the tablers were determined to table until all the tickets that were given out on August 3rd were dropped. Others wanted to do a 72-hour vigil that went on for at least 72 hours to gather names, signatures, email addresses, and acquaint the public with the issue, as well as kind of establish an initial presence on Pacific Avenue that kind of said to the merchant community downtown, this is where we're going to be if Camp Paradise gets dislocated. We are moving down here. So if you think you have trouble now, you can imagine what kind of trouble you're going to have then if you don't like our looks. We think we're doing just fine. We're not violent. We're not loud. We're not brutal. We're not in any way the disreputable individuals that apparently your laws claim us to be. But we need to be visible. We don't even have to be visible, but if you're going to harass us, we'll get real visible. And that, I think, is a really important part of the survival lesson of this whole Camp Paradise story. So there was some dispute. There were some differences of objectives among the friends of Camp Paradise who set up this vigil. It wasn't really Camp Paradise per se that did, though a number of Camp Paradise people, including the co-founders, participated, including Dirk Clod and Larry Templeton, Pam, Richard and others, Brian, Joda. Actually, Joda wasn't there. She's now a critic at Camp Paradise, but that's another story. A bunch of people whose names that I'm leaving out, but a lot of people put in a lot of work, 24 hours a day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night. Now, on Thursday night, there was a Voices from the Village hour forum debate that involved Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack, or Mark Prozac, as I now like to call him. These are two new city council members. Kennedy actually is one of these endlessly repeating, recycled council members that has, you know, done his deal with the devil with the merchants, and so he's now, you know, he's going to be there until God knows when, unless, you know, the word really gets out and people really unite about him. Premack is a straight-out conservative, one might even say a straight-out bigot. Kennedy's an opportunist. These are my opinions, by the way, and nobody else's. And they were on the air talking about why Camp Paradise couldn't survive there, couldn't be there, how that was wrong, and so forth. And their arguments were, in essence, torn apart by people in the audience, I understand, by callers. I've not been able to see the show. There were two people that were declared excluded from the radio the audience by Voices from the Village producer Charlie Phillips. And those were myself and Becky Johnson, a video journalist who has her own show, Club Cruise, on the community television channel 27, every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock. Good show, lots of homeless stuff, half hour long. I recommend it if you have cable TV. Charlie Phillips is an older man who, to his credit, does some good work trying to do video of homeless topics and other controversial community topics. Unfortunately, I have to put it this way, his head is so far up the ass of the city council that he's coming out their teeth. The guy is just an endless supporter of the first city council member to make a positive noise about on a homeless issue, regardless of that council member's record, regardless of what the real situation is. And Charlie is an older man. He's not entirely well. He's been a member of the community for quite a while. He's been hanging around homeless events, and one has to say he's been a part of these different groups, Monday Morning Group and other groups, for a long time. And I'm not saying he hasn't done positive things, but this exclusionary policy of activists, I think, plays right into the hands of those who want to divide this movement and conquer it. Some might say that my being critical of him is, too, but unfortunately he's in a position of some power. And, for example, he's also sitting on a tape of the destruction of the last legal homeless campground. That is the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. The Coral Street Open Air Shelter was actually provided for safety for homeless people. It was right where the community house is now, the Page Smith Community House at River Street and Highway 1. It was vastly overcrowded. Yes, indeed, people did take drugs there. They did drink there. They did have dirty dogs there, and there was inadequate toilet facilities because Karen Gillette of the Homeless Services Center wouldn't allow them to use the restrooms at night. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which ran the campground under Paul Lee and Daryl Darling, thank you very much, who are still pimping the homeless in this community for their own ends, in my view, we did not seek and get the funding they needed and put in the kind of facilities that needed to be dealt with to allow for that tent city to continue. The campers organized. They got an agreement from Daryl Darling and Paul Lee back in 1995, and a lot of this was videotaped by Charlie, who did a good film called Campground, from which I was excised from every single film, every single frame, even though I was in most of them. He cut me out. At which, you know, I mean, that's fine. As long as you know, get the message out, I don't have to be personally there. But it shows you the kind of inveterate hostility that this guy has, and I think it affects his objectivity as a journalist. He then made a film on a key occasion in mid-December. Kennedy and Rotkin, Michael Rotkin, who was the mayor at that time, Kennedy was a sort of second-in-command, and other council members met with the Camp Paradise people, with the Coral Street Open Air Shelter people. They were going under the name of SOS, Save Our Shelter, at that time, and told them they were all going to be kicked out, and made them leave, and humiliated them. It was quite a scene. Now, Charlie has a very valuable videotape of that, and it's been seen by a few activists, Dan Hopkins, for his trial a year later, because Dan mounted almost an 8-month-long vigil at City Hall with other people protesting City Council's actions at the Coral Street, protesting the community house issue, which community house was approved on what he regarded as a toxic site, and also it replaced a tent city that served six times as many people, although indeed it was very crowded, and nobody died at that tent city, but then when people dispersed, they died, 6 to 12 of them. He regards Kennedy and Rotkin as murderers. Dan Hopkins does, the activist who is one of the few people to see this film that Charlie Phillips has been hiding away in his vault. And why has Charlie been hiding it? Well, he says he wants to make a video of this. But the reality is what the film shows is just how brutal, vicious, and how little the word of people like Scott Kennedy, Mike Rotkin is worth, and how feeble people like Catherine Byers are in defending the rights of homeless people. And it shows other things, too. It's a very important film. And I would encourage people to call him up and tell him to release that film and let it be seen by the community, because right now it is very, very pertinent. Right now there is another campground under assault, and no matter how many sweet nothings Scott Kennedy tells to Camp Paradise, Scott Kennedy has a track record, a proven track record, of breaking his commitments. I can say this personally because I have, on four different occasions, made arrangements for him to be on this show. This was when he was still a council member. He did not show up for one of them. He also was a part of a committee that was supposed to work out changes in the sleeping ban in the summer of 1998, right before the election. And as if you talk to activists David Silva and Laura Tucker, you'll find that he sabotaged that effort. He didn't show up at meetings. he led people to believe that there would be something that would be done so that an initiative did not have to be filed and didn't get done. And he is also a person who goes to camping ban repeal rallies. He used to do this when we were throwing these rallies in the 90s, and kind of quietly tell protesters that he was with them all the way. However, at city council, he would not say a word or raise the issue about even changing the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, say nothing of the whole camping ordinance itself, which needs to be rewritten. And in his most recent run for city council, he said he favors keeping the sleeping ban. This is also the man who gave us the downtown ordinances, the law that makes it illegal for homeless people to ask peacefully for spare change downtown. And he also gave us the law that made it illegal to sit down within 10 feet of a shop. Originally, it was to sit down anywhere on Pacific Avenue. There is very little that I can say that's good about Scott Kennedy, although I actually had a long interview with a man who thinks a lot of him because of his work around affordable housing. I know that Kennedy and Rotkin pushed the Beach South of Laurel plan, which was going to make dozens, I would say scores of Latino people homeless at the expense of expansion for the boardwalk and commercial development in the beach boardwalk area. Kennedy now supports the Dolphin Lee debacle, which will produce less housing and spend all the affordable housing money for the next 5 to God knows how many years for a project for Mercy Charities Housing, the pet monopoly shelter provider for the city, which has been pushing this project for years, but will actually produce no significantly new affordable housing in terms of the number of units and people served. It'll give some people better housing, but it won't produce significant expansion in the housing situation. And Kennedy supports this. So I guess some of it is I don't like the positions Kennedy takes, but I also find he's broken his commitment. So when he tells Camp Paradise people that we're going to resolve everything in a Tuesday morning meeting, because all you have to do now is, you know, we'll turn it all over to the land trust, it'll be a nonprofit, they'll run Camp Paradise, blah, blah, blah. The proof is in the pudding. And I also want to say an additional thing. It's not Camp Paradise, for me, that is at issue. It is the homeless community in Santa Cruz. I'm glad that one group of people is standing up for their rights under pressure, I might add. They didn't just decide to suddenly be great protesters. They did so because they had to. But there's a whole group, there's a whole class of people out there that is hiding out because it is illegal for them to hold up their heads and say, this is my tent, this is where I'm sleeping, this is where I am, and take responsibility for what they're doing, and do so in a way that is safe with a group of other people. There are numerous camps, but they have to hide. They can be swept by the police and are swept by the police at different times. And you get fatalities through drug overdoses and accidents that you wouldn't get if there was a real communal situation in which people had access to legal and medical facilities and resources. And Santa Cruz, let's not kid around, has the ability to do this. And Kennedy's arguments apparently at the Voices from the Village session, from which Becky Johnson and I were barred by Charlie Phillips, the producer, Kennedy, he objected that, oh, all the people in the world can come to Camp Paradise, you know, and therefore it's not a good camp. You know, I mean, the response of Becky Johnson was, well, the satellite shelter program is full too. Does that mean we should discard it because it can't take care of all the homeless people? We have a call coming in, I think. Caller, call back if I've ignored you, and we'll put you on here in a moment. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm spending about half an hour answering a question from Skidmark Bob as to what happened to the tabling downtown. And the answer is, as I said, the tabling is kind of on vacation. There also was an issue of, there was some concern at the table that a couple of the tablers were not comporting themselves with the alcohol and drug-free tenants of the camp. And I can't speak to that. And that's actually going to be talked about as we discuss resuming the table today at Camp Paradise. That'll be a meeting at 2 o'clock for the friends of Camp Paradise who want to be there. That's down at Camp Paradise on the San Lorenzo River. And if anybody doesn't know where Camp Paradise is, by the way, in case you would like to see it or talk to the folks there or see what they've done, It's easy to find. You go to Denny's on Ocean Street, go down Felker, which is the street directly to the right of Denny's and leads to the San Lorenzo River. Right before you hit the river, there's a dirt path leading off down the hill and under the Highway 1 underpass. And you go under that, you take that trail down to the river, and it goes under the underpass. And you go up the river, right next to the river, for about 500 yards, I understand. And there is Camp Paradise. It's unmistakable, even though the police have apparently torn down the signs, or somebody has. It's easy to find.
Country Radio.
It looks like our caller is calling in and hanging up. If you want to reach me privately, you can also, and this is true for anybody listening, call the Huff line. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And if you have stuff you want to talk about that you don't want on the air, or if you have stuff that you want on the air but you're perhaps not quite ready with it, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and you can call that right now, and there will be an opportunity for you to get into a voicemail there. Or you can wait until I begin to play this next tape, which should be very soon, and we can talk off-air. So there's going to be a discussion as to whether Camp Paradise itself wants to begin, or the Friends of Camp Paradise wants to resume tabling on the mall. One of the things is they got 1,000 or so signatures and emails which have yet to be entered into the computer so that they can be used in an effective way. And for people who want to help with this, Carl Wilson is doing this it's a yeoman's job all by himself. Give him a call if you want to offer some time, and he needs help. 425-4787. That's 425-4787, and that's for the Friends of Camp Paradise. And a lot of this has to do with a response to a potential attack on Camp Paradise. If the police move in to destroy the camp, and they've shown that they have no problems saying, you know, breaking their different deadlines, and though Fitzmaurice has said it's the lowest priority, apparently he has no control over the police department or doesn't want to exercise any control or influence, because they go down and give out tickets days after he's made that statement. On August 3rd they did. Give a call to help the idea of a tent city in response to any destruction of the Camp Paradise area, where the tent city will be a bit more prominent, say at City Hall or possibly down on Pacific Avenue, so that the community of tourists that come through town, the merchants who ply their trade in town, the students who are coming back to town, and just everybody generally can see that homeless people are not going to be invisible, and the housed community is not going to support this attempt to use police to sweep homeless people out of sight and away from town. And Carl needs help getting these addresses and phone numbers together so that he can do proper emailing and get this potential tent city organized. And if you want to be a part of the tent city, you can also call him. And his number again is 425-4787, 425-4787. If you miss these numbers, or if I screw up in giving them to you and give you the wrong number, the one number that you can surely rely on is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And just call me up and say I tried to call or I missed the number, and I'll give it to you. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I am indeed still and always your host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert. Still looking for something better to do with my time, but I haven't found it yet, so I'm still here. And I'm hoping that we can prepare a tent city that is as solid as Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, as well-financed as Cher's tent city up in Seattle, as long-lasting as both of them. They've both been there now, for the one in Portland for 8 months, the one in Seattle for a year, over a year. They're urban campgrounds. They move from place to place. They do not meet the needs of the homeless community in either of those cities, just as Camp Paradise could not possibly meet the needs of the homeless community in Santa Cruz. But they are a model for what can be done, and they are a slap in the face and a puncture of the bigotry balloon that people like Rotkin and Kennedy fly when they say, oh, we can't do it because everyone will come here. Oh, we can't do it because there are too many people. We can't do it because there's no nonprofit to run it. We can't do it because there aren't the votes on the city council. We can't do it because the bigots would protest. They have 150 different reasons, and they're all wrong. And if anybody wants to come and defend their perspective, I would be happy to have you here on the air and to debate with you. I've done this with Mike Rotkin. Hard to keep up with that man. He talks faster than I do, but it's instructive to hear. And The key thing I think we have to remember is it's not worth the time, really, talking to these politicians, as long as they are arguing things like, well, sir, those colored folks, you know, they like it down there in slavery. I mean, they're arguing that kind of stuff, which is what Marty Wormhout, by the way, and Jan Buttes tend to be saying, oh, well, you know, you draw attention to the homeless people, and they don't like that. Well, it's true to some extent that they don't like it, and the reason they don't like it is because the laws of Jan Almquist, I mean, of Jan Buttes and Jeff Almquist and Marty Wormhout and Keith Sugar and Tim Fitzmaurice, all these laws criminalize homeless people. So yeah, you bet your ass they don't like to have attention drawn to them. What we need to do is change the laws. We need to change the situation so that people can camp legally, so that there is a protocol for the police department that until they have a shelter bed available, they cannot approach a homeless person for a so-called life-sustaining misdemeanor. That includes sleeping, that includes camping, that includes urinating and defecating if the city manager and his pals on the city council insist on not putting in the required porta-potties and bathrooms mandated in February of 1999 unanimously by the city council. In Miami, Florida, under the Pottinger decision, the protocols, I believe they're still in force, although I've got to do an update on this myself. In 1998, they were required the police essentially to not harass homeless people. They can advise them of the availability of shelter. They can advise them of the availability of services. They can do criminal investigations of other things. But they can't come up and use a homeless person's homeless status as a basis for searching them, seizing their property, humiliating them, and driving them out of town. So you might say Miami is a couple of steps ahead of Santa Cruz, because in Santa Cruz, the police have that blank check. Now, it has to be said that yesterday at the Green Party meeting, there was a step forward taken by the Green Party General Assembly, which turned from wasting its time attacking me and defending Fitzmaurice implicitly to actually supporting a resolution by the Homeless and Housing Issues Working Group. I used to call them the Homeless Shirking Group. I guess at the moment I'm going to have to put that label on the back burner, because for once they didn't shirk what they were shirking for the past 5 months. And the resolution was passed at the Green Party Assembly after a half-hour presentation by Carl Wilson, by Khalil, who's the environmental expert hired by Camp Paradise for a dollar. He's apparently got cheap rates. I'm going to have to get him down to check out my facilities. And the resolution said, in essence, don't enforce the sleeping, you know, abolish the sleeping and camping bans and other laws that criminalize the homeless in the city and county. I probably should try to read it for you, and I'll try to find it later in the show to read it. And it also said that there should be support for Camp Paradise, educational effort for Camp Paradise as well. They didn't go so far as to talk about a tent city or engage in that kind of stuff, but that it looks like they're numerous people in the Green Party that want to be supportive of a real strong direct action response if the city chooses to move on Camp Paradise. Now, for some of us, this wasn't enough, and indeed, that hasn't really been organized. If you want to be a part of this tent city effort, again, call 425-4787. Speak with Carl Wilson and offer your skills. You don't have to go to jail, although it'd be good if some people are willing to be arrested in this situation. You don't even have to live in the tent city, but you can be supportive. And if you want to do that, even if you've signed the petition, call him up and offer him specific skills and specific time to help. And as I said, he needs help in data entry. He needs to have some way to get all these hundreds of signatures and emails and that people gave at the tabling. And my hat's off to all those people who tabled, by the way. Some of them didn't like each other very much. You know, I mean, there are people who kind of got together and they held their nose and they sat with each other anyway because they realized there was a broader cause here that they were fighting for. And that we're still fighting for. There is no victory. You know, I mean, you might say every day is a victory. The police don't remove Camp Paradise, and that's certainly true. But in another sense, there's no victory until the law changes for homeless people generally in Santa Cruz and, as important, police policy changes. Because, for example, Portland, Oregon, Judge Gallagher threw out the entire camping ordinance in September, but police then first ignored him and kept giving tickets and then started using other laws to harass people, visible homeless people. So there has to be a settlement of a broader kind, not just the abolition of the camping ordinance's restrictions, so that there is a real camping ordinance that's legitimate and deals with reasonable camping restrictions, not a camping ban that's directed against a whole class of people. But also, there has to be a way to make sure that the police don't continue this class war, particularly in the times that we have of rent control not being there, housing speculation being rampant, university students coming back to steal all the housing, university expanding its little corporate racket, pumping more and more students into the university and then into the community here, that taking more and more of the housing. So, again, all this stemmed from a question by Skidmark Bob: what's been happening with the tabling? Is it going to resume? And the answer is there'll be a Friends of Camp Paradise meeting at 2 o'clock today down at the camp. That's been the custom for the last few weeks. I don't know if Jeff from San Jose, Reverend Jeff Lilly, I believe his name is, I may have that wrong, is out of the hospital, or if Larry Templeton or somebody else is going to lead it. You can only go down there and find out, and I'm hoping we can get a response from Camp Paradise from somebody with a cellular phone. I understand a number of folks down there now have cellular phones. You might say, what are these homeless people doing with cellular phones? And I said, well, they're working homeless people. That's what they do. Larry has a joint partner in a bike repair shop. They repair bicycles. Other people have other day jobs they rush off to on their bicycles and then come back to Camp Paradise. That's why it's so valuable for them to have a place to stay, that they don't have to stand in line or wait for a lottery or worry if the police are going to harass them. Though, of course, they do have to worry about that at Camp Paradise, because Mayor Fitzmaurice will not control the city police. Because City Manager for Life Dick Wilson apparently has the throne here, and he does the decreeing. And frankly, I think we should get together, a lot of us, and go talk to Dick Wilson. I don't mean threaten him or anything of that sort. I mean go and tell him, understand from his perspective just what his policy is. Dick Wilson is a soft-spoken, well-spoken guy. He's got great suits. He's a well-paid city official. But he's a city bureaucrat who's enforcing a cruel and vicious policy, and apparently he's taking some, I don't know whether it's pleasure, but he's taking some initiative in doing so. And the city manager's office is I don't want to say it's a good homeless shelter, but it's a place that could be, I think we could make ourselves comfy there if we wanted to talk to Dick for a while. I've tried to arrange a meeting with Dick for next week in hopes of discussing this with him, and this would be a meeting at which I'm assuming there would be no sit-in. This would be just a preliminary meeting. And I'm not saying that I'm about to go sit in Dick Wilson's office. But I do point out that, for example, activist Jim Costner in San Jose, when he was illegally remanded on bail about 2 or 3 weeks ago, got that action reversed when a bunch of us went up to the second floor of the district attorney's office and wouldn't leave. Of course, it was during business hours. We had a right to be there. Unless you, of course, take Tim Fitzmaurice's view that some of us can't be in those public areas during the day because we steal pens and harass secretaries. That was his claim for 5 months, keeping us out of those offices until the court threw it out. Here's a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Roberto!
Hello.
Roberto, hey, it's perfectly legal to protest in front of City Hall, isn't it? Or?
Yep. As long as you don't break any windows or hose down City Hall.
Nobody violent there.
There's numerous police officers that can sometimes be found at
City
Hall.
Right.
I don't know whether we call them violent or not. They certainly have the potential.
Abuse of power.
Yeah.
Petty little tyrants?
Well, I don't know if they're petty tyrants, but they...
let's not get into name calling.
They work for petty tyrants is my problem. You know, they work for people who are, let's just put it this way, presiding over a tyranny toward homeless and poor people.
Well, when you're city manager for life, I guess that's AKA job security.
Well, yeah, it's also AKA political cowardice, because there are people who we thought...
Or there'd be debate, huh?
There's people who are supposed to challenge Dick Wilson and kick his ass out, along with Barisone and Belcher, the city attorney and the police chief. But, you know, once Crone and Fitzmaurice and Sugar got into power, you didn't hear a peep about that.
Robert, you know, now and then I'll think about it. It's like, it makes me like irate as to think how petty a person, people can be, as to take their porta potty away. You're talking people that are trying to live day in and day out in a grim, vile, unjust system, and to take their porta potty that those poor people paid for it, right?
They rented a porta potty. I guess right. It was in early June, and when they had this big barbecue, and it was removed because apparently the city said that it was improperly placed on city property. Though Christopher Crone denied this was the case when Jeff, the reverend from San Jose, tried to have a porta potty put back in. The porta potty company told him, "We can't do that. The city won't let us." Now, who knows who's telling the truth? But the city could make a statement that says, "Hey, you know, it's okay for you to fund a porta potty there," or they could simply put one in themselves, as they were really required to do by Crone's resolution from February of 1999, setting up the task force on bathrooms.
It's as if they won't let any little bit of goodness come out of themselves. It's not bad enough to take the porta potty away that the campers paid for out of their pocket. Then they cut off the little trickle of water coming from the cemetery that the cemetery owners allowed them to have. So they cut off the water, shut off the sewage.
Right. It's
I can't think of anything more disgusting.
Well, you might.
And plus, they molest them and threaten them.
Yeah, well, this is what the police did back with the Los Chorales homeless shelter back in 1989. It's where the drop-in aid center is now on Front Street. Actually, it was right before and after the earthquake. A woman named Judith Beinert set up they bought the restaurant, or they rented it, and they turned it into an all-night cafe for poor people and let them sleep at the counter. But it's illegal to sleep not just outside in Santa Cruz under the sleeping ban. It is illegal to sleep in any structure that is not a house or hotel. So police raided Los Chorales restaurant and eventually got it shut down, even though it was, of course, a social service effort.
Hey, Robert, if me or you were guilty of doing those vile little misdeeds, those vile little ploys behind on the people that are hurting, how could me and you look at our fucking selves in the fucking mirror?
Well, you will tell yourself that you're only doing it for the public health and safety, that homelessness is a national problem, that people are good people, this is what Emily Riley says, are trying to do good things. You will tell yourself that, as Scott Kennedy constantly proclaims, that we have the best social services up and down the coast per capita. Actually, that's Rotkin, but Kennedy goes along with that. You will say, "Look at this, we're building a family shelter," or we're turning some of the buildings over at the Homeless Services Center area into a family shelter for a few families, and that'll be ready in about a year, although that will make as a drop in the bucket. You say, "Well, look, we created the Homeless Services Center, and you can get lockers out there, and you can use the phone during the day." In other words, you will parade out before the public and before yourself all your accomplishments, and you will say, "We're doing as much as we can. These are hard times." It's a conservative administration in Washington.
No, it's a booming economy. It's good times, we're told.
Well, during good times, you know, there are other problems, because homeless people, they tend to come here more because this is such a beautiful climate. And unless we drive homeless people away or make it less desirable, they're going to overrun us, you see.
You know, one thing I learned, Robert, in AA, right, 11, 12, 13 years ago, was to thine own self be true. You know, and that's one thing that helped us change certain people, AAers, drug addicts, whatever, what have you, is to, like, you know, to honestly, rigorously check ourselves out and our motives, right? And for me to do shitty little deeds like that, I consider it vile, you know, and for me to look in the mirror and knowing that I'd done what I'd done, you know, I don't know how I could look in the mirror and say, "Yeah, it's okay today. I did what I did. Took their porta potty, turned off their fucking water, you know, down there fucking threatening them with little tickets, molesting them, you know, and me having the power to actually change something, right? Put them on some asphalt, build like a metal shed roof for the winter, you know, allow a little heat or something, some dignity, try to find them jobs, help, right? You know, mandatory AA meetings, whatever it is, right? Daily, one a day. You know, do a little, pick up a little trash. You know, some goodness come out of my fucking heart, right?
Right.
I mean, it's doable."
Oh, yeah. I think it's quite doable.
Anyway,
yeah.
Thank you, Robert.
No, thank you.
I'm looking forward to 2 o'clock.
All right, we'll see
you
then at Camp Paradise.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And you are still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. We'll be right back.
right. I said downtown when you're brown on a Friday night playing Russian roulette with you, but not with a second-hand Saturday night special. Nah, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capuleto that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown. Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. Because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason. And you will find yourself at the corner of 27th in Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by 4 police cruisers, while 2 pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a 3rd one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, cause somewhere someone's getting arrested for being brown.
Serpentino, downtown. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Bathrop Spears Broadsides is coming at you. Call-in number is 427-3772. And I'm going to be replaying now a part of the interview that I've already played on the air a show or two ago with a guy called Juba, a black guy who was apparently, by his account and by that of some other folks as well, taken down by police, hogtied, and dragged off to jail, beaten with batons, is what this woman who called me on the phone said, on April 6th. And it looks like we missed that call, but call in again, caller. We're going to play the account that Juba gave me a week or two ago, and he was going to, I believe, or some of his supporters were going to show up at the Sentinel March, the march on the Sentinel against its biased or absent coverage of Mumia Abu-Jamal, as well as in terms of also Camp Paradise. So that happened, I believe, on Wednesday, last Wednesday. But I didn't see anybody there, and nobody approached me on the issue, and I'm still hoping that there can be a more formal presentation made of these horrendous claims, and certainly if they're facts, they need to be addressed. And we, as usual, continue to need a real independent commission that looks over the police from the people's side, and that issues releases every month on what needs to be improved in the police department, if you want to use that gentle approach, or fundamentally changed, and also gives a forum for folks who don't have a forum at the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, because Becky Blythe and Sandy Brown and Arnie Leff and Chair Jim King just don't want to hold any public hearings. Or at least, if any of them do, they don't want to talk about it loudly enough to mobilize support for real public hearings. In the course of the last 6 years of the Citizens Police Review Board, that's how long it's been alive, Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board, there have been zero public hearings. They do have public meetings, but they do not have the formal public hearings where an individual can confront the police officer. That has never, never happened. It's amazing. Let's hear a little bit of from Juba, and call in if you have any thoughts on this issue.
Okay, it's about 10 to 4 on July 31st, mm-hmm. and we're talking to
Juba.
And Juba, you're an African-American man.
Yes.
And you experienced an interesting contact with the police.
Mm-hmm. On April 6th of this year, as I jaywalked across Laurel, I was stopped by a police officer on Pacific who grabbed my arm and then later punched me in the back of my head and jumped on top of me.
What was his name?
I don't remember it right now. I've been in and out of court ever since that happened in April.
What did he charge you with?
They charged me with jaywalking and resisting arrest. Right. He told me to stop. He got out of his car and told me to stop, and it was 12:30 at night. I honestly didn't take him seriously because, you know, jaywalking is jaywalking. Everybody's jaywalking right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just seems like I was being singled out.
No.
So what happened was I was crossing Laurel Street heading north on Pacific. No cars were coming but a police car, which stopped at the crosswalk and let me cross the street. Got up to about Sunshine Imports, Salvation Army, that area. He turned the corner onto Pacific and got out of his car and asked, and first he said, "Yo." I turned around and saw the officer putting up his baton into his holder, mm-hmm. and got immediately just this aggressive vibe from him. So I just said basically that I don't respond to yell from a public official, and kept walking. And so he said stop, and I said no, I'm not going to stop. And now my goal was to get up to Tampico, where it was a bunch of people milling around outside of the
restaurant.
Yeah, and so he comes up behind me and grabs my arm. I told him don't put his hands on me ever again. And so he followed me all the way up to just past Tampico, where that alley is. And while he was following me, he was calling for backup. And then once we passed in front of Tampico, nailed me in the back of my head. And
how did you do that?
Well, I felt a fist. Someone, a friend of mine who said he saw it from across the street, said that he actually, like, draped over me, like, threw his hands over me. I felt a blow to the side of my head and his whole body on top of me. This officer had a ride along with him, which is a citizen who agrees to, you know, just go out and follow the police. And I find it interesting that an unidentified white male was listed in the
police report?
The police report as, like, helping the police to hold me down. Yet when witnesses were asking what I was being charged with and why I was being treated so roughly, because I was hogtied, hobbled, and thrown into the back of a paddy wagon.
I'm charged with jaywalking.
Yeah. The officers that came intimidated the crowd. It was like 30, 40 people outside. Mm-hmm. They two witnesses that they used in their report was one black man who saw the whole thing, who was standing right there in front of Tampico, and one other guy who was across the street at the Blue Lagoon. They didn't use any of the 40 or so witnesses that were there except for the black man to corroborate their story.
Did you get the names of any of the other witnesses?
Yeah, I yelled at the crowd that had gathered around. Someone went down to the Saturn where I used to work and got some people who then took a list. And the list was eventually lost. So I don't know what's going on with that. But my lawyer filed a motion.
Lawyer's name?
Kester Wise.
Yeah, paid or unpaid?
Yeah, he's a public defender.
Is he charged with resisting arrest? Or?
Yeah, resisting arrest and
jaywalking. Don't forget jaywalking.
Yeah. That's what came first. So, I don't know. Actually, I went and talked to him today, and he told me that as far as legally, that the cop had a right to take me down because I didn't obey his order. But, I don't know.
There's an interesting question there, because there's a question of whether a citizen has a right to use lawful force to resist an unlawful arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of a contradiction in the code.
Mm-hmm.
What it worked out to when we looked at the code, I'm not quite sure that this really is the final story, but the Citizens Police Review Board considered this issue as a sort of a general issue. And what mm-hmm. they came up with was that the code said that it wasn't legal to resist arrest, but you couldn't be charged, you couldn't be convicted of anything if it was an unlawful order, because the officer was not acting in pursuit of his lawful duties. So it was kind of a borderline deal. I'm still looking for a better explanation of it. But so how much time did you spend in jail?
I just spent like 6 hours in jail, and they spit me right out.
And you didn't get the name of the cop?
Yeah, I do have the name of the cop, but I don't remember right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I could take down your number, and you can give me the name at some other point. I'll give you my card, and we can do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this was racially motivated?
Oh, definitely.
Why do you say that?
Definitely. Well, I mean, like I said, everybody, I walked across the street in front of police officers plenty of times in this town. I mean, since then, I've made it a point to jaywalk as much as I can every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I've jaywalked holding hands with friends since then, and, you know.
Have you seen the same police officer on the street?
Yeah, I have.
And what has been his reaction when he's seen you?
Well, I saw him a couple of weeks ago at the farmer's market. He came to break up.
This wasn't a sergeant, was it? Not Sergeant Baker?
I really couldn't tell
Officer
you.
Officer Richard?
He's a tall white man.
Officer Gunter?
Was he like blondish brown mustache?
Hmm. I was about to get that. To get the name of the guy.
The big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And in his report, he mentioned that I was well muscled and, you know, just little insinuations that definitely implied prejudice and, you know.
Well-muscled?
Yeah. A well-muscled black man is a threat in Santa Cruz.
You've got to watch out for these people who are darker of hue, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you're about 6 feet. How much do you weigh?
About 180.
Well, I got a ways to go here. Well, you can always file a complaint with the Citizens Rah-Rah Board, also known as the Citizens Police Review Board, and they won't do anything, but you will be able to get it on record. So that's one advantage. So, for example, if another person is taken down by the same officer, then the defending attorney can use a pitchess motion to try to get that officer's, subpoena, get you in court as a witness that the officer has used excessive force on you. You feel it was excessive force?
Oh, yeah. I had 6 police officers on top of me. One of them was prying my jaw open with his finger to get me to comply, and like others kneeled on me and sat on me, and you know, all for jaywalking supposedly. It seemed like the whole police department was there.
You're just not showing enough respect for authority, son.
Yeah, exactly. I was showing too much respect for myself.
Well, too much self-respect can be a dangerous thing.
Definitely.
If anybody has witnessed this event and wants to be a witness again, because apparently you've lost the list, give a call to 423-HUFF, and I'll pass on the information to...
Juba.
To Juba. So think about that, folks. If you saw this or know anybody who saw it, call me at 423-HUFF. Anything you want to add?
I love Santa Cruz and intend to be here for a while, but I won't tolerate harassment or intimidation by any of the officials here.
Any response from black leaders in the community, like, let's say, Pat Clark or the NAACP?
No, I'm not sure that they know about it yet. But among the black people that I know in town are really up in arms about it. The Cesar Chavez House have been giving me really good support. They went to court with me yesterday.
When is your next court appearance?
My next court appearance, I believe, is on the 9th of August.
It's on the 19th of August?
Let's see.
You're consulting your dreaded pink slip from the court receipt here.
17th
of September? Looks like the 17th of September.
Hello.
9 o'clock.
8:30. Yeah. The
30th. 30th of August. We finally got it here.
Then the 13th of September and the 17th.
So 30th of August is the next court appearance at 10 a.m. for pretrial. Then there's, looks like, not sure, but I think looks like jury trial.
Selection and then jury trial
perhaps. Yeah. So if you want to come to the pretrial of, what should we give your full name here?
Well, that's my slave name. You can mention it.
Your slave name is Patrick Levermore,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a., or I should say, more properly known as?
Juba.
All right, so that's the 30th of August. Check it out. Department?
I don't know. It's usually like a list. It's been different courtrooms I've been going to.
Right.
But it was Department 2 last time.
And if you saw anything around this incident on April
6th,
you'll give a call to 423-4833.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In front of Borders here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I am. Hi, this is David. I'm calling from the Sierras.
Oh, wow. That's an honor. Good to hear you.
I just thought I'd call in. I can't hear your show, but I just thought I'd call in just to check, see how things are going. I hope people are getting a good night's sleep each night.
Well, the Camp Paradise has not been removed by police or reticketed, as far as I know. There was a 100-hour vigil on the downtown mall between Monday, 8 o'clock in the morning, and Friday.
Yeah, I sort of did my little vigil there at the city manager's office, but he started yelling and screaming and making too much noise, so I decided, well, that was a setup. He was just making it so I'd be arrested or something, so I left.
Well, next time, just have a couple people with you, Dave.
Yeah, I should have a couple people with me. But I was in between doctor visits, and I had one person waiting for me at a doctor. I had to go pick them up. So
well, considering your experience with City Council and Officer or Sergeant Andy Crane, it's good to have a doctor nearby when you're at City Hall.
Yes, it is.
You were, in fact, thrown into a concrete pillar in 1996, and
never recovered. My knees never really recovered. I should have never settled, but then, you know. My lawyer did lose that videotape 1 week before the...
You actually settled for $20,000 in an agreement that there would be retraining of police, but the police were never retrained, right?
Actually, they never retrained within the 12 months that they were supposed to. They, after bugging them about 17 months later, they did some kind of training, but they didn't use the video they were supposed to use, so I still have that case reopening.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I have a new case, you know, with the when they kidnapped and threatened to murder me last summer. I'm just calling people to remind them that... the abolitionists and those people who are calling for not only the wake-up calls, you know, on weekends to call that list of people in case you're on that email list. And I think tonight, I think it's Andy Schifrin's turn. And if anybody wants that number, it's 423-3154. Don't call more than twice in one night and probably use a payphone. on Monday is, shutdown City Hall day. So call every single City Hall, manager, office manager, office worker, and tell them that, you know, if they're supporting in any way, whether they be rangers or even in the finance department, if they're supporting a city government that criminalizes people for just being homeless, then they're breaking international codes, and according to the Nuremberg principles, they have a right not to work with that. And I call on all police officers especially to denounce the law. I call the city manager to publicly denounce the law, but he said that he can't do anything about the law. It's the law is the law. But this is not true. The Nuremberg principles say quite the opposite, that you have a responsibility to stand up when you have an institutional hate crime like that. Crimes against humanity. Sleep deprivation is torture, and that's crimes against humanity. What they're doing, taking away sanitation, taking away toilets from people in campsites that have HIV, to me is probably one of the cruelest kind of form of torture. If you know people that have HIV, you know the situation with diarrhea and everything.
And there is a person with HIV at Camp Paradise, and he...
Well, one of the persons that was there with HIV has had to go in for a liver.
He also had his medical marijuana plants taken away from him by police.
And they can't do that.
But they do, of course.
Yeah, of course they do. Yeah, they promise, they make deals, they tell us, you know, they've made all kinds of deals, but they, since if the police is involved, you know, then it's a lie, and it's a cheat, and his handshake is no good. He's not an honorable man. And the same goes with Chief Hammack. If anybody wants his home phone number, he's the head of the Rangers. It's 438-6873. Okay, it's recommended not to make more than 2 phone calls in one night and call from a payphone. I say 3 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the morning is kind of fair, wouldn't you?
I retain the right to be silent on this bit of advice, Dave.
Well, I think that Howard Zinn's words should be taken seriously. I think that he was right. It's the only way we're ever going to change anything. If these people start losing sleep themselves, then some things will change. But they're not losing any sleep. They're just making money. Marty Warmhart, you know what should get paid? What should get paid? Marty Warmhart gets paid $86,000 a year to tell the sheriffs to push homeless people around all over the county, have secret meetings to make sure that the powers that be crack down on anybody trying to do any kind of change.
Yeah, Marty doesn't control the police, but she certainly could speak up about it.
She's one of the powers that be. There are, you know,
yeah, she could be encouraging city council to change the sleeping ban instead of retaining it.
One single person more than any other person in the entire county that is responsible for that sleeping ban staying in place.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt in my mind about that. I think last Monday was her wake-up call. I think she gets another one probably this coming Monday. Anybody wants that home phone number? It's 426-0894.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, be sure to call City Hall as many times as possible, everybody, tomorrow, all day long. Let them know that, you know, they are, according to Nuremberg principles, they cannot, especially the Rangers and the police department, call every number in the phone book in the blue section. Okay, I'll be back in town next week, and hope the struggle continues.
And be sure you email to us your proposed version of changing the sleeping ban. Ed Porter is making noises again about...
Okay. I've sent him so many versions. I've sent him all the versions that we've ever worked on. He's saying, I suppose, he doesn't have any versions, right?
He is saying that there's going to be some. Well, I'm told secondhand, according to I think Michael Schmidt, that he is considering bringing up some changes at the first September council session. But again, all this closed door talk, I place little credence in myself.
Yeah. I don't think that. When is the first session of?
It'll be the second Tuesday in September.
What day of the week is that? What day, you know?
And the date, I don't have a calendar.
Well, everybody remember that second Tuesday, you know, we probably won't be on the agenda. I really doubt that he'll get on the agenda. So be ready for, you know, to completely dominate oral communications.
Well, thank you, David.
Okie dokie.
Hey,
keep up the struggle.
I'm
sorry I'm missing your show.
You aren't. You're here.
Okie dokie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that was David Silva calling, apparently from the Sierras. He was encouraging people to call and give political officials, even at their homes, a wake-up call around the issue of the sleeping ban and their complicity in this basic human rights violation, this institutionalized hate crime. I myself am more perhaps prudent in my perspective. I think that. I separate the private and the public spheres here. I think that going to these city officials' homes is, I've only done it on one occasion. I've done it on two occasions. I did it in San Francisco with a large group of people. Art Agnos, the mayor, who was responsible for cracking down on homeless people in 1989 at the Civic Center Plaza encampment, and we did some serenading across the street in the early hours of the evening. It wasn't at 2 in the morning. And then, similarly, in the relatively early hours of the morning, we did a sidewalk serenade in 1988 here in Santa Cruz of all the council members. We went from one council member's home to another, encouraging them to talk with us and end the sleeping ban. And actually, it was quite nice. We had a Mercury News reporter with us and so forth. But it was public. It was done by a group of people who are willing to take responsibility. I'm concerned about anonymous phone calls to city council members and the possibilities for, well, both how the public regards it and also how the eager city attorney or DA might regard it. I do think that I can understand a homeless person calling up at 2 or 3 in the morning when his campsite is raided and angrily telling those city officials what he thinks, even if they're at home, because he has been woken up, it's as though somebody came in to the city official's home, dragged them out of their bed, destroyed or sort of removed their house with a huge van and left them, not only just left them there, but told them to get the hell out. That's in essence what it's like. So it's really, really mellow comparatively to get a call at 2 in the morning if you're a city council member or a city council official, a city head, administrative head. Anyway, that was proposed by one of our call-in activists here, and it's not something I do, but I think everyone should make their own choice on that issue. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, is the station you're listening to. There are people with radical solutions out there, and if this sounds radical, remember, there's no violence being proposed here. This is simply, in a way, it's not even an eye for an eye being proposed, in the sense of, they're not proposing that we invade people's bedrooms at 2 in the morning and remove them and give them tickets, which would be the equivalent of what the police are doing. Rather, it is using the telephone to remind them of what's going on and disturb their beauty sleep. So I want to just say that as well. But, again, it's not a course of conduct that I personally will follow or that I recommend others follow. I do recommend, however, organizing a tent city so that the minute any sizable number of homeless people are attacked by police again with no legal alternatives, that the tent city rises at City Hall. I'm broadening this from saying just that if Camp Paradise is attacked, because while I favor Camp Paradise, and I will certainly be a part of any tent city if Camp Paradise is attacked, I don't think we can simply limit ourselves to Camp Paradise, because Camp Paradise is one encampment, and there are many encampments throughout the city. They should be decriminalized, and if there are problems with them, then they should be dealt with as a health and safety problem, not as a sleeping problem, a blanket problem, or even a camping problem. So I encourage people to give a call to Carl Wilson at 425-4787 if they're interested in being a part of the tent city or in helping him do some data entry for Friends of Camp Paradise. If you want to assist, begin a tabling effort again, there's Friends of Camp Paradise are going to be talking about that at 2 o'clock at Camp Paradise. And the new organization that some of us formed on Saturday morning, JUST, J-U-S-T, actually it was formed out of a HUF meeting. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and JUST are initials that mean, well, join us, sleep tonight, JUST. And of course, we're talking about the restoration of justice. And JUST is a group that I believe is now taking the position that we want significant changes in the camping ordinance all over the county and the city. The city, it's the city camping ordinance, but also the policies in the county that will allow people who have no legal shelter a way to shelter themselves without becoming criminals. And whether this is to be done by court action, direct action, divination, dancing and singing, drumming and flinging, I don't care how it's to be done, but it's got to be done. And that's what we're talking about, the one possibility being a tent city. And we're always open to other ideas, too. I suppose there's going to be a HUF/JUST meeting next Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker Square for anybody who wants to attend. That's when I usually come wandering in. It's kind of early in the morning, but you get a lot of coffee that way, and I can't think of any good reasons, but I'll be there if anyone else will, 8:30 on Wednesday morning, to do updates on what's going on and figure out what's next. One of the things we actually talked about at the HUF meeting on Saturday was the plight of Richard, the guy who got hassled at the Seabreeze Inn for presenting a voucher, or actually, I don't know, for chatting on the sidewalk with some companions in front of a vehicle, and driven away, in essence, by apparently what sounded like a very bigoted owner of the Seabreeze motel. Again, I haven't talked to the Seabreeze owner. I'm simply taking one side of this, so it could be I got two different accounts from two different people, but they were both angry at what had been done. One was from Larry Templeton, the other one was from Richard himself. And we were talking about now a protest at the Seabreeze Inn Motel, a picket of some sort, but before we did any of that, we are drawing up a letter to the vouchers agency that essentially gives the Seabreeze Inn business from the social service / homeless community and asks them to investigate this. And we're preparing that letter now and seeing where that's going to go. There's also been some controversy, and if we look at the tabling for the last 5 days, for those of us who have been doing it, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of really fine energy, people staying through the night and handling it all alone down there in front of Borders Bookshop. But in the end, there was kind of a lot of burnout happening. There weren't people who were really regularly scheduled to cover and be there. People were kind of doing it by the seat of their pants and doing it well. I'm not saying they weren't, you know, they didn't cover it. It was covered, but it wasn't covered in a fashion where there were always two people there, where it was sort of, you know, it wasn't done with the regularity and dependability that might make for a much longer-lived vigil. And I think that could be a part of what's needed to break the back of the sleeping ban and to change the camping ordinance, and to deal generally with police practices that harass homeless people in Santa Cruz. And I say that because I believe that you got to go to where the people are, you got to go to where the money is, you got to go to where the power is in Santa Cruz, and that's downtown Santa Cruz. That's just where it is. And I know it does offend some businesses, and it does offend some members of the public, but the fact is, as I've said before, the business community downtown generally has not been terribly forthcoming or helpful in acting to restore rights to homeless people. They have been willing to allow homeless people to remain second-class citizens in Santa Cruz around the sleeping ban. I haven't seen any kind of statements from the Downtown Association or any of the other groups supporting safe and legal places for homeless people to sleep or any offers. Now, it is true that they didn't oppose, as far as I remember, the provision that passed in 1999 that says two businesses may, if they want, allow somebody to sleep in their parking lot. A business may allow two vehicles to sleep there with the written permission. But, I mean, that sounds to me like simply asserting your private property rights. What's needed is to decriminalize homeless sleeping, period, and to set up campgrounds that people can go to and make it less likely that people are going to have to, you know, flop around in unsafe and perhaps unsightly places. And frankly, with all that unsightly flopping that you're going to see initially if the sleeping ban is lifted, I think that'll produce a lot of social service action, because much as Mike Rodkin and other people may say that, oh goodness, if they see all these homeless people lying around, that all the donations are going to get cut off, it's just the opposite that happened in Florida. They increased the donations because they felt so ashamed and embarrassed that there were so many homeless people there, because now they could be seen when Judge Clyde Atkins got his settlement in place. And that's something I'm going to read about shortly. But before I do, I'm going to give us a little taste of life at the table as it's been in the last week, the vigiling table in front of Borders.
What would you do if your son was at home crying all night on the bedroom floor 'cause he's hungry? And the only way to feed him is to sleep with a man for a little bit of money, and his daddy's gone. Smoking rock now, in and out of lockdown. I ain't got a job now. So for you, this is just a good time. But for me, this is what I call life. Woo!
Oh, we have a new Camp Paradise.
Hey, what's up, Wayne?
A newcomer. Your name, sir?
Joe Shan.
Where are you from?
Australia.
And how long have you been in camp?
Just one night.
Okay.
Two nights, yeah.
Nice. And have you been attacked by any women in camp?
Not yet, no.
Not yet. Well, come on down to Camp Paradise. And this is a man with a Is that a real S tattoo or a pseudo tattoo?
No, it's real. It's like a super Jesus.
It's a super Jesus. Forgiven.
Very cool.
You're a man with numerous tattoos. How would you describe... What is this tattoo on your right arm?
This is... Well, that's my name up the top. That's Joe Shan. And then this one is like a vulture that I got in Sunset Strip.
A purple vulture, actually.
And that was my first tattoo. Underneath there, it's a Def Leppard. And that's like the woman of my dreams, Bonita. She married another guy. It's Holy Spirit under there. And that's all fire around. And this one is...
On your other arm.
On my left arm, this is... that means... That's the Arabic for Abba, which is Abba Father. Mm-hmm. This Ben Shua, that's... That's my, like, imaginary name for a new church. That's this woman when she gets her act together. This is Jesus Christ is King. Yeah. Van Halen. And more fire on there.
Well, I don't see End the Sleeping Ban on you yet. Now, when is that going to hit your back?
What's that?
That's the law that criminalizes homeless people from sleeping in Santa Cruz, actually in other cities,
too. Well, that law is actually... I've studied law, and from talking to a few people, my understanding is that that law is ultra vires because it conflicts with federal law. So it's actually by federal or by... Yeah, but pretty much by international federal constitutional law,